And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking with Max Egan from crowhouse.com and his other website, gazashield.com. Head on over there and check that out as well. We're talking about the atrocities in Palestine, the Gaza Strip in particular, but also the mentality of the Israel and everything else in related topics, of course, of basically the disease of Zionism and this kind of globalism that we're faced with here with corporate culture and cultural Marxism and everything else that we've been slaves to in the last, 50 years or so. But we have much more to discuss here, Max, and I want to ask you a little bit more about some of the things that we've seen in the past in terms of trying to raise awareness about the situation in Gaza and some of the things that have happened to some of the people that have gone down there. I mean, you mentioned that yourself. There's a clear-cut possibility that when you put yourself in the situation, you can definitely be taken out. We know about some of the things pertaining to Rachel Corrie, the whole flotilla, scandal. But it really shows that even in these very, very upfront and brutal cases where people are flat out murdered, it still seems to be not enough of attention and focus to kind of cause a major protest, against it to actually make a dent in it. My question was always, maybe this is due to the fact that we have a lot of pro-Zionists in charge of our media, and you actually still haven't managed to kind of get a real movement going and focus on it. Why do you think this is, Max?
Oh, it is absolutely Zionist-controlled media. I mean, what I was talking about before, the spin on the headlines, it's so spun. It's incredible. And looking at Rachel Corrie, I mean, the death of Rachel Corrie was an utter tragedy. And this was what they do. I mean, this is how their settlement program works. People think of these settlements. These aren't little settlements. They think settlements are a little log cabin or something. These are big apartment blocks that they build on Palestinian land. And Rachel Corrie was actually standing up for a doctor, standing at the front of a doctor's house. A doctor and his children live in this house. They'd sort of become her adopted family in Gaza, and they just ran her down. Now, this is what a vote for Hamas stood against, this type of brutality that was being directed at the Palestinian people. If the people in Gaza hadn't have voted for Hamas, then there probably would be no Gaza. It would have all become settlements by now, and everyone would have been sent to the West Bank. Or be in jail, because if you fight back, you're a terrorist. We're going to come and steal everything from you, and if you fight back, you're a terrorist. That's basically what's been going on in Palestine for 66 years. And people are just sick of hearing about it because it's always portrayed as a war between Israel and Palestine. But Israel and Palestine is the same country. It's not one country. And it's presented as a civil war then, but it's not. It's land theft and ethnic cleansing by people who have no claim to the land, based on this whole scenario that's been created through World War II. And the way they get away with it and the way they continue it is because the people in Israel, the Jewish people, have been trained and kind of had their faith and their religion hijacked and been taught that the world hates them. And so they've become very, very brutal towards the rest of the world, and they're currently in a state of defending themselves all the time, but there's nothing there to defend themselves against. The world doesn't hate them. It hates them by their actions because they think the world hates them. They attack everybody. It's an incredible program that's running here. Mm-hmm. And it's in control of so much. It's been so well set up and so well orchestrated. But the thing is, it's a whole global arm, and everyone's being played, Henrik. Everybody's being played. The Jewish people are being played. The people of Israel are being played just as much as anybody else, because the controlling hand doesn't care about them. They're just a mechanism that's being used to do all of this. It's such a game, but I think, I don't know, people are beginning to wake up and see it. But with the matter of Gaza, I mean some of the things that have happened, like the flotilla. Ken was on the flotilla that went in there, the Mavi Marmara. There was like 9 people shot, I think, 9 people killed. Ken did a week in jail, in an Israeli jail, over that. We've seen the brutality of these people firsthand. We've seen what they can do. And the mentality, I mean, the programming, the level of programming. Look at what they did to that Palestinian teenage boy in response to those murders. They took that poor young boy and they tortured him. They poured petrol down his throat and set him on fire. I mean, this boy had nothing to do with these other 3 youths that got kidnapped. But what sort of a culture would do that, would even think of doing that? An innocent teenage boy. This is not normal behavior. There were 3 Palestinian boys that were machine gunned at an Israeli checkpoint 2 weeks before the three Israeli boys went missing. We didn't see any Palestinians kidnapping Jews and pouring petrol down their throat. We didn't see Hamas start carpet bombing Israel. We didn't see them whip up any type of racial storm or anything. They just mourned their lost children because they're used to losing so many, you know.
That's amazing to me. I mean, I'm amazed that there isn't more suicide bombings to avenge some of this behavior. As a kind of a sentiment I said before, you know, there's like that there isn't more just people completely just freaking out and just doing as much damage as they can, you know?
Well, exactly. These, after what's been done to the Arab world, these people have showed an incredible amount of restraint, especially the people in Palestine, because they're such kind people. They are really, really kind people. And I was amazed at the level of kindness and the level of pureness in these people. Now, these are the true people from the land. They really are, you know. And if you really believe in such things, if you really believe in religion, and you really believe in the whole story of Christ and the whole Son of God and all of this sort of stuff, you know, and you believe in that whole Jewish line and what happened and the teachings of Christ. This is one of the things that Christians support Israel so much, but they don't look at the picture.
Yeah.
You know, if you really believe in all of that stuff, well, there's a quote by a man called Martin Buber who works at the Hebrew University, and he says, "Bring me a Palestinian Christian from Galilee and I will show you the purest Jewish blood on the planet." Because that was the actual line that Christ was supposed to come from. Christ was a Palestinian Jew. And the line that came from that, from his teachings, would have been the Christians of Palestine, Palestinian Christians. And there's actually a lot of Christians in Gaza Strip. Why don't the Christians in America understand that it isn't just these Muslim terrorists? There's a whole bunch of Christians in Gaza Strip as well. I went to one building. It was on the corner of a block. There was one door on the corner, big door. And you walk down the left aisle to go to the mosque and the right aisle to go to the church, and they pray together. There's no animosity between these people. There's a lot of large Christian population in Gaza as well, and you never hear about that. And if these people really do believe in all that stuff, why don't they look at who the original people of the land actually are? Because it's these guys in Gaza and these guys in West Bank, and that's who you should be standing up for if you really believe all that stuff, because that's the actual line.
Right, you know? Right.
It's these guys that have come down, they've hijacked it, so... It's a huge setup, you know.
I've seen some of the footage, a couple of different videos of various people being down in Israel, and I've seen, at least in these videos, I think one was Thoreau. What's his first name? Was it Justin or whatever? He did it pretty good. I think he's from Canada. He did a pretty good job going down and showing how some of the Christians that traveled down to Israel, how they are treated and the way that they were considered to be filthy and unclean. They could be part of, for example. These are Christians. They're there to. They want to help the Jewish people, right? It's like a spiritual and religious experience for them. But it was something with the grapes. Just a small example here. They were making wine, but they were not allowed. The Christians were not allowed to carry the barrels of the grape beyond a further point within the vinery, whatever you call it, vineyard, because they were seen as unclean. And there's a couple of other these examples as well where Christians are around in the area, and there seems to be a high resentment for that. Now, if that's across the board, I don't know, but I've definitely seen some of that footage, and I was really surprised that I think there's a lot of Christians don't understand this. A lot of the Christian pro-Zionists don't understand that there is a huge animosity as well towards Christians. But if they knew some of this stuff, I think that they're hopefully, in a way, their sentiments would begin to change, because at least from the American perspective, I don't know how it is in other parts of the world, but the Christian Zionist movement is a huge supporter and a money and a cash cow for Israel, of course, which only adds to this issue and to this problem.
Exactly. See, I think that this is why I think it all goes back to who these people actually are and whether it may be a genetic thing, because the Semitic Jews that I've met and the Semitic Jews that are in Israel, a lot of these are very good people. There's a lot of them who hate Zionism, who want things to go back to the way they were, who don't respect the state of Israel's existence, say it shouldn't exist at all. It should have just remained the holy land that existed within Palestine for thousands of years, the way it always had been. And so you've got to look at this line. Why would all these Zionist Christians really exist when this whole thing is so much against both Judaism and Christianity and Islam. It's against all of them, the main monotheistic religions. It's kind of its own life form, Zionism. So where does it come from? I think it comes from these Khazars, this Khazar line. If you look at the history of the Khazar race in the Khazarian Empire. They were a very, very warlike race. I can't remember his name, but I started with a B. Like I said, I'm a bit vague today. But the Khazar king actually used to hire out mercenaries to other countries that were having wars. And if you got the Khazar army working for you, you didn't expect to take any prisoners. These were really, really brutal people, absolutely brutal. They'd rape, pillage, and plunder everywhere that they went. And you couldn't get them out. They were embedded like a tick. They were a very, very long-running empire, you know. So I think it's just this line. I don't know. These are very, very brutal people. And they have been brutal people through history. And I think they've gone out and they've infiltrated everything. Like when the Khazarian Empire kind of dissolved, which was around about a century ago or something, you know, like it started around about 600 or 740, I think they converted to Judaism. And they lasted till about 900 or 1100 or somewhere around there. And they kind of spread out across Europe from then. This all became the Jews of Poland and all this sort of stuff. But the thing is, they'd convinced themselves within a couple of generations that they actually were the descendants of King David. That's the thing. When you look at the Israeli people, the Israeli education system, when they tell you that there was never a Palestine, that it's all – and all of the stuff that they tell you is completely false history that they tell you, they're not lying to you. They truly believe this 100%. Mm-hmm. And they believe that the world does hate them. They're fully, fully programmed. It's the most programmed culture imaginable, and it's got a completely different history to the rest of the world. And they're so paranoid about it, and they're so intent on doing this that they've gone out and infiltrated all of our countries, and now they're teaching the rest of the world that false history. And the rest of the world just going along with it because they don't know. They just do what the TV says. It's amazing. It's amazing what's happening.
Yeah,
so that's how it's kind of all been done. So that's who I think it is. I think it's the Khazars because the Semitic Jews don't want this, and the Semitic Jews really aren't like this. And all of this Muslim extremism. This isn't Muslim. This isn't Islam. All the Christian extremism isn't the teachings of Christ, and all the stuff that Israel is now doing to Palestine. It's not the teachings of Judaism. So. It's all been hijacked by these Khazars, you know.
Yeah, of Arthur Kessler, of the 13th tribe. I've seen some of their arguments, you know, both for and against it. And at this stage, I'm not certain about any of it. This is more for me personally to look into and everything else. But I think, nonetheless, despite all of that, kind of talk with David Icke a bit about that last time he was on here, and we kind of talk, you know. The question is how much it matters, you know, for them individually per se, even if it happens to be a genetic thing, unless, of course, you have an idea that there are differences on that basis alone, which makes it more interesting then. But what I'm getting at is that if it is a religious ideology per se that you are attached to and attracted to and are supporter of, then it doesn't really matter that much if you happen to share genetics or not, if you happen to be Semitic, if you have interbred with Europeans so much so that now you have, you know, mainly European DNA, but you still call yourself, you know, Jewish, what have you. I think it seems to be more about the adaptation of the mindset and perhaps the religious aspect, you know, kind of play into this as well. But as long as the acceptance of the behavior, let's say, of Israel, or that you defend Israel or whatever they do because they happen to be Jewish, and my God, you can't speak up against the Jews or whatever, then that is the problem. I think we need even more people to speak up against Israel, and specifically people that are of the Jewish faith. I think the more that happens, the better it is. And even if that means that it creates division within their ranks, that's the better, I think, in that regard. And that will be an internal issue that they have to deal with, that the behavior of what Israel is doing right now is not something that should be accepted across the board. And I'm not saying that it is either, but I think that it would be even more beneficial if more and more people were speaking out for, you know, about this, especially if they were Jewish, Max.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. See, that's one of the hard things to get across to people is that speaking out against Zionism is not anti-Semitic. It's not speaking out against Jews, because Zionism is actually very, very anti-Semitic. It really is. And with with what the Zionist government is doing, it's going to bring about the implosion of the state of Israel. If you really care about Israel, then you should really look at who's running it and what it's doing. Because, as I was saying, the whole culture and faith has been hijacked with this false history with which people are taught to hate and taught that everybody is a threat to them. And it's not true. Nobody's a threat to anybody else. It's all created, and it's all fiction, and it's all programming. That's the problem. You know, these people have had their faith and their country hijacked, and to a large degree, so have many other people. But there are still pockets of purity left, which is what you'll find in Palestine, which is why they're so intent on wiping it out so publicly, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's got to understand that the whole world has been hijacked by something that is not what it seems. And really, I mean, if you look at the whole thing, the whole Vatican system, the three city states, you know, these big attack dogs rise in different places all the time, whichever suits the agenda, however it works, you know. And you look at how all this has been orchestrated, you know, they destabilize the entire area. Then they started ethnically cleansing Gaza. They shoot down a few planes to keep you distracted. All of this war posturing with Ukraine, all of this sort of stuff. I mean, it's all theater for the masses. It's all about depopulation. They don't care where it is. I mean, if there was a war in Ukraine and all of this sort of stuff, they don't care. They just want to send your children to a place so they can all kill each other. That's what it's all about. Kill as many people as possible and get them to do it to each other. Just cook up all these things. Shoot down a few planes. Do this, do that, whatever. Let's just kill lots of people. And that's what they're doing, you know. It's all theater, you know. And nobody wants war. I don't know anybody from any country who wants war. The governments cook all this stuff up and they send your kids off to kill each other. Wake up, people.
Yeah, people line up. Exactly. They send their kids. I mean, look at just, again, the military support of all these other, countries, of course, that are, you know, this is done by Western countries. And now, of course, they are getting a lot of blame of this, while in effect, our governments are occupied by those people who do not have our interests, you know, at heart either. So this is, it's absolute mayhem and chaos across the board in that regard. But what do you think about the territory itself then, Max? I mean, if we look at Palestine and why this area, because as we know, I mean, there were organized Jewish migration on the proposition to Argentina for a while, for example, the Andinian plan. And there's been other kind of suggested territories when Theodor Herzl kicked off the Zionist movement. And they said, well, we might be able to do it over here. We might be able to do it over here. If it's a biblical story that's based on a lie, largely, do you think that the value of the land and the territory itself actually means something? Does it really, or is it just it just become a symbol of what they want to keep and preserve for themselves, which in this case is a homeland? But I guess in your case, you mentioned that they recently discovered some oil there, so that would point in a different direction, I guess, right?
Well, it's a huge, huge oil and gas field just off the shore of Gaza. That's why this incursion's being done now. I mean, that's why Egypt is backing off as well. That's why Egypt's letting them do it, because a lot of it's in Egyptian waters as well. It's in the corner of the Mediterranean there, you know. I mean, Gaza's the Mediterranean. People don't understand this. This is the Mediterranean. This is paradise, man. When I went there, the energy is incredible. I mean, there's something very, very special about Gaza Strip. There's incredible power there. You know, maybe a lot of it's from the people, but it's an incredible place. I'd live there in a minute. I was actually supposed to be in there now for Ramadan. I was supposed to get in there in July, and I was waiting for my ticket to boom, and I was waiting to get approval for entry into Gaza, and the people that were flying me to Europe, it was kind of the ticket prices are going up and up, and I'm thinking, well, it doesn't look like I'm going to get entry to get in there now, because I was thinking maybe they could just fly me from Cairo to Portugal, you know, it'd be a lot cheaper. But I couldn't get into Gaza, so I just said, okay, well, you might as well book the ticket. So they did, and they sent me the ticket, and then 4 days later I got approval to enter into Gaza. So it was that four-day window. Otherwise, I would have actually been in there now, and I was supposed to be there for Ramadan. That's another thing. This whole raid has been done in Ramadan. This is like Christmas for the Muslims.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So they really, really plan to do as much as they can. I mean, Israel's been trying to kickstart World War III for a long time. And that's the problem, you know. Everybody's against this, but America's still sitting there backing Israel. And if any other Arab nation steps in to help Palestine, America will come to the party, and then they also come to the party. And this is another thing that they're trying to do. They just want to kill as many people as possible, as violently as possible, and this is what they do, you know. But
No, it's unfortunate, but it's true. Maybe a little bit later here, we can talk a little bit more about what you think could be some of the things of trying to kind of change the tide of this and how things are a little bit. I think it's increasingly important that people begin to, talk about it, speak out about it, inform themselves about it, spread the word about it. I think that definitely do. I mean, these kinds of topics we're talking about now has definitely gone out there even more so in the last, I'd say, 2-3 years, much more so, which is a really positive spin on it. But one thing, of course, I wanted to discuss before we go there is just, a lot of this, the problem that has arisen here is due to a people that is largely without a homeland, right? And this idea that they need a state to belong and a place to be, right?
Exactly, exactly. See, if you look at the, and this is what, this is another thing which suggests this is Khazars, you know, there's a lot of these people and they don't live anywhere and they don't have a country. They were sort of kicked out and nowhere else would have worked. No other piece of land would have worked because this has got a biblical story attached to it, as you said. This gives a legitimacy to what they're doing. It's our land. God said it was. You know, we were exiled and now we're coming back, you know?
Yeah.
The right of return. See, they've created all of these things, the right of return, anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, keywords, all of these things and all these, what do you mean right of return? What is this right of return? Is there a right of return for the Palestinians? Is there a right of return for the Australian Aboriginal? Maybe there's a right of return for me. My family came here from England as prisoners when they were sent. Maybe I can go back and take England over. You know, is there a right of return for my family to do that? Is there a right of return for anybody to go back to where their bloodline originated from? When did this happen and why did it happen? And why is it only for one people? It's for one people because of the Holocaust. What happened with all that then? Something else that's really interested me is the fact that there's a book you can get by a man called Martin Brian Riggs or something like that. I'll just find the what's his name? Brian Mark Rigg. And it's called Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, The Untold Story of Nazi Radical Laws and Men of Jewish Descent in the German Military. Yep. There are actually 100,000 Jewish soldiers in Hitler's army. Yep. There were 10 Jewish generals and one Jewish field marshal in Hitler's army. So perhaps these are the ones that actually ran the camps and things and set this whole thing up. Perhaps these were Khazar Jews, and perhaps these are the ones who did all the damage. Perhaps they had to do this to make sure there were people that remembered this terrible stuff that happened. You know, they had to create all this stuff to create what they're doing now, you know. And it all rides on the back of this Holocaust, which has allowed all of this to happen, you know. So You've got to look at how this has been done.
What happens?
Wonder who orchestrated
Max,
it. You know?
What happens if it turns out that there are even more lies behind these stories than we've led to believe? I mean, that would be just an amazing place, of course, to end up in terms of realization for a lot of people. But the fact is, there is a lot of people that have done investigations into this. None the least people like David Cole and others, of course, where a lot of it seems to have been massive amounts of Soviet and Allied propaganda after the war, reconstructions and bridging all of this stuff together as a way of legitimizing not only the destruction of Germany that we talked about before, but also consequently everything that has happened when it comes to Israel and everything. I'm just posing the question here. What if then this is all hinged on a massive lie? What happens and how does that change the story if it's true what people like David Cole is saying, for example, that there's a lot of lies surrounding the Holocaust? How does that change the picture?
It changes everything. It changes everything. But even if the Holocaust happened the way they said, even if 6 million Jews died, and I don't know whether they did or didn't, because I'm not a Holocaust investigator, you know, and it's a dangerous area to go to. Especially in Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't even
end up in jail.
Sort of
exactly. Thing. Yeah. And that's exactly. why I wanted to look into it. When I heard that, I was like, what the hell? Are you kidding? Is this the only historical event you're not allowed to research? You cannot be in jail for doing it, for questioning it?
Well, all I'm saying is even if it happened the way we're told, even if everything in Schindler's List is true, there were soldiers who were running these camps and soldiers who were doing all of this, and what part did the 100,000 who I suspect were Khazar Jews in Hitler's army play in this? Whereabouts were they stationed during the war? Were they near any of these areas? Were they any of the people who gathered up, any of the people who suffered in the camps? Were they the ones running the camps? Who knows? What were these doing? What were these people doing in Hitler's army? If Hitler was out to exterminate Jews, why was there 100,000 of them on his payroll?
Well, I don't think it was because he was trying to exterminate the Jews. Where's the paperwork for that? There's no exactly. No one has found any paperwork. They were meticulously documenting culture, the Germans, and no one has actually ever found anything like that.
Exactly. But what they have found paperwork to prove is that there were 60,000 Jews who were rounded up and loaded onto trains and sent down to Palestine in 1933.
Right, that's true.
And you watch a lot of people say, oh, no, we remember rounding up Jews and putting them on trains. Well, I'm not saying that they didn't, but where were they going? Were they going to death camps or were they going to Palestine? Because there's proof here that says a whole bunch of them went to Palestine. All I'm asking for is for you to give me something similar.
There's
a lot of questions.
A lot of questions, exactly.
Qui bono, when you look at all of this and you look at the result of all of this and the state that the world's in now, and you realize that we could well have been hoodwinked in far more ways than we imagine. You know, history is written by the winners.
And, yes.
You notice if you look back through history, it's incredible how the good guys always won. You see that? Isn't it amazing?
Exactly. I mean, I just don't understand why good, sensible people and truth seekers. And again, I'm not making any kind of clear cut assertions at this point in regards to anything. I just have a lot of question marks at this point. That's all I'm doing here. But I just don't understand why good so-called truth seeking people are great in discovering conspiracies, the lies in everything that we have seen going on in the world, except on the question when it comes to Germany and what happened during the Second World War. There, the Hollywood version is 100% correct, and there's nothing about that you're allowed to question. Otherwise, you're a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. So.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting setup that's going here. I think one of the greatest unmentioned crimes of World War II was actually the bombing of Dresden, which happened after the ceasefire, which was commanded by Winston Churchill. Dresden was a town that was swollen to the brim with refugees, mainly women and children who'd escaped from Berlin. Because, of course, when peace was declared or ceasefire was declared or the end of the war was declared, the first thing that happened was that Berlin got flooded by Russian troops who looted the entire town and raped every woman they could find. Some women were raped to death up to 100 times a day by soldiers. Any woman aged between 8 and 80 was a target. And many of these people fled with their children to Dresden. And Dresden was swollen to the brim to about 200,000 people. It had about 25,000, I think, and it was swollen to about 200,000. And then Winston Churchill ordered it to be carpet bombed, and they bombed it for 3 days and reduced it to rubble. And killed about 200,000 people. According to Allied figures, they killed 20,000 people. According to German figures, they killed over 200,000.
Yeah, that's right.
This was after the war, and this was only refugees.
Yeah, there was no military reason. Targets in Dresden or anything like that. It was a largely beautiful city with a lot of archives and museums and things like that. It was a psychological impact that they wanted to do on the German people with this.
Absolutely. It was women and children, refugees, and it was after the end of the war. And it was one of the most brutal and horrific slaughters of innocents that ever happened. And the women of Berlin at the end of the war were the people who suffered most in World War II. I mean, sure, a lot of bad stuff happened in the camps, but what the salvation, the people who came in to save you did was unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. What the Allied forces did to Germany was unforgivable.
Yeah, that was after they've cleaned the pool at the concentration camp. But I've actually heard from people who justify this set of behaviors as they believe that the German people, the children and the women deserve this. It's just amazing that the cruelty and the unhuman behavior that I've heard from people here, where they seem to justify violence because they have a belief at this stage, because they haven't investigated the true story of what actually happened during the war. I mean, all of this, we have to remember, all of this stuff was stuff that came out later. It seems like they think that all the Germans, I mean, again, even if we take the official story as we're given them about the Second World War and what actually happened there, if we take that official story, which I believe is largely lies, but let's say let's just assume that it happened that way, then this is not something that was known during the wartime. This is something that was, pieces that they presented afterwards and kind of laid this puzzle for us, meaning that there wasn't some kind of mass psychosis from the German people where they all just lined up and took part in this kind of in the concentration camp, story and everything else. So it's I think we're terribly blinded when it comes to the accuracy of what actually happened here, and even the idea that it's wartime in itself, and a lot of people all over the place, you know, suffered, and they were starved to death. There were sanctions put on Germany, and even the camps in itself, of course, a lot of people alone would have starved to death. I mean, there's even the typhus problem alone killed, you know, several hundred thousand people. That's even admitted, you know?
Absolutely. Look, there's no winners in war, and there are no good sides and bad sides in war, and the people are the ones who suffer. And some of the people who suffered most in World War II were the people of Germany, and they suffered after World War One. They suffered through from World War One to World War Two. They suffered through World War Two, and they were blamed for everything. And it really wasn't them. Whether Hitler was a bad guy or not, it wasn't the fault of the German people. Anything that happened in World War Two was not the fault of the German people, and they've been persecuted and suffered ever since. And it's this slaughtering of innocents that is so justified in war because of what your leader did. You know, it's just the same as what's going on in Palestine now, the slaughter of innocents. It's just justified. Nobody cares because these are just terrorists because Israel says so.
Right.
Nobody cares, you know. Yeah. And even if it turned to the stage where the whole world turned against Israel, then there would be they would justify the killing of ordinary Jews and ordinary Israelis who had nothing to do with it as well. You know, because that's just the way people have been trained to think. It's the way they've been trained to react. It justifies all of this. You know, if someone commits an atrocity, then we can blame the entire people. It's this subtle racism that's portrayed in every aspect of our lives. Collective punishment and subtle racism. We're taught not to be racist. We're taught to be multicultural, but we're always fed racism all the time. Everything is racism. War is racism. I mean, for God's sake, of course it is. Any war is racist. How can it not be, you know? So I mean, let's look at all the wars on the planet. So, but everything, you know, it's justifiable wholesale slaughter of innocents, and it's all done through this. I don't know. It's sick, Henrik. It's hard to imagine where we could go from here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If people look up to what's happening, and I think we're really at a turning point now. I mean, I've been trying to convince people and talk to people about energy and see, this is what it's all about as well. I mean, ultimately, it all comes down to us. It's why aren't we standing up to our governments? It's because of fear, because we don't understand ourselves. We don't know who we are. So we don't approach reality from the right perspective. We don't approach each other from the right perspective. And you can come back down to these spiritual understandings, which give you the strength to stand up and do what you and I are doing, to stand up and actually speak out about this and call these people accountable for their actions. Because that's the only thing that's going to save the people in Gaza Strip is if we all step into our power right now and demand that action is taken, and if it isn't, we'll take it ourselves. You've got to understand with the mentality of the soldiers in Israel, they've got to stop doing this. Stop bombing these people because you're doing so much damage to your own country and your own image and everything that Israel should be. You can't have this. You can't just completely eliminate another country. There can't even ever be a two-state solution for the Israel-Palestine problem. It's got to be one state. It's got to be one state which is a democratic, fair state. Not an apartheid state, which is what it is now. How much they say it isn't, it absolutely is. I mean, just the fact that this ghetto exists is apartheid. Just the fact that there's a wall around the West Bank, this is apartheid. How can you have a wall around a place and say it isn't apartheid? It's ridiculous, you know?
You know, I think you're absolutely right when you say that it's actually about us. It's not about them in that regard. We have been... I think we've been so domesticated, so weakened to a certain extent, and specifically the men in our society, that we've been basically taught just to follow orders from you know, childhood and up, and this has caused tremendous amounts of issues and problems. I mean, I think there is something to say for a positive use of violence from righteousness, meaning that if we could. I mean, we've been so set back that something that 1,000 years ago was self-evident among the good men in the tribe, that if you got a psychotic maniac in charge of your tribe, they band together and they took him out, or they ousted him from the community or from the tribe or whatever, because they knew that this is a man who's going to lead us all to ruin and it's not going to work. It was for the betterment of all. I think that there is a positive aspect to violence and this idea of action and doing something about it. Today we're in such a far removed space from everything that has to do with that kind of a natural order that exists that we were connected with a long time ago. And we're basically passive. We're sitting around waiting. We don't dare enough to take risks. People are not, they're even afraid of talking about it. That's how far it's gone, Max. That people are afraid by words that is going to be used against them, and they cower down because of that. It's like we are no longer men. We've been turned into something else. And I think the world, if they need anything right now, it is the men of this world to stand up and actually change the scenario, and for good people to do something about it, you know?
Yeah, we need to get back to the divine masculine. We've been all turned into these fluffy little things, you know. Put down your Eckhart Tolle book, folks. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, I know.
But again, even when we want to address this, we tend to address it country by country. Even with what we're doing now, with seeing what's going on in Gaza, we'll attack Israel. We'll want to stop Israel. But really, the people of Israel need to understand that they've been programmed into hating. You don't go and use these type of dime ammunition and these type of exotic weapons and white phosphorus and all this stuff. You don't drop that on people. If I was in the army and he gave me some dime ammunition and told me I had to use this on civilians, I'd turn around and smash him in the face with my rifle butt, drag him off to the nearest police station and say, this guy's a psychopath. And then I'd find out who invented the dime ammunition and have him put it in an insane asylum, because only a maniac would invent stuff like this. I mean, you know, people have been programmed into this sort of stuff. We've been programmed into hating the Jews. It's the government of Israel, which is run by this whole Zionist system, which has programmed these people to be this way. And it's a very, very effective attack dog for the rest of the world, because it's caught up in this whole woolen structure of anti-Semitism and the Holocaust and all this stuff that protects it. You know, you can't do anything about this attack dog because it has to be there, and it has to be an attack dog because everybody hates it. If it isn't an attack dog, someone might get it. You know, this is the mentality of the whole thing. This is what Israel is. It's an amazing thing that's been constructed here. But ultimately, the problem is our governments, and the only thing that's going to deal with that is us. We've got to realize who we are and realize that these guys are just people just like us. They're not anything special. Government doesn't even really exist. Government is just an idea in a book. It's just a concept. You know, people go into these big buildings and they do what it says in the book, you know.
Yeah.
And if they haven't got a way of stealing from you and doing more things and putting more rules in place, they write it in the book and they put a fancy stamp on it and they say, now we can do this. It's just an idea, you know.
And then people say that that's fake to a certain extent, but it has real life effects on us. You know, I mean, I'm not a believer in politics, and I've been very hesitant to talk about political action or anything of that level. But I'm at a stage now when I realize that in every walk of life, there needs to be good people that, in an effect, infiltrate into any system that they can, in whatever area that they can have any kind of influence, be that politics, be that the business world or you know, the cultural, the arts, whatever area you can, to begin to spread sanity in this insane world and prevent and stop and halt bad people from doing anything. I necessarily don't think that the political system is going to be the ultimate way that we're going to, you know, lead and structure things per se in the future. But for now, it's like we need people to that degree, make that sacrifice for the lack of a better term. I hate to use it, but make that sacrifice of trying to of spending parts of their life in trying to do something which they know is good, working towards a good goal. Because if a lot of these people who claim that they have, you know, answers and they think in a good way and they know they're interested in truth and history and the real story of everything, if these people continue just to sit on their asses and not do anything in any regard, it's not going to matter. You know, there has to be a certain point where we actually, you know, we take up the sword, or we start using those words, whatever, you know, influence that we do have upon the world, and work in that direction, you know. So I've kind of, it's such a, in a dire strait at this point that I've come to realize that in whatever area we can, we need to try to improve and make betterments in whatever system that is in, Max.
Well, we do, you know, like politics is unfortunately the only thing that the masses understand. So you need to have some sort of a political movement which will start bringing the bold truth to people in a comfortable way. They can identify with it, you know. And even with attempting to bring in a new system and all sorts of stuff like this, you know, like the Ubuntu system that Michael Challenger talks about, I haven't actually looked at it very much because I just haven't had time. But I don't think we can really offer people a new system. I think that if we can change our perspective of who we are and how we interact with the world around us and start acting according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, then we can change the world. We will need some sort of political system to allow us to do this. We need people who are awake to go into politics to start shifting things from the inside and stop playing by their rules once you get in there. Start speaking the bold truth.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But, yeah, I mean, look at Farage and what, you know, what happened in what's happening now in the European Parliament and these anti-EU parties that actually are getting in there. I mean, that's a great sign. It means that they're speaking up. You can agree or not with all their, you know, politics and whatnot, but it means that for once there are a couple of parties that actually are offering some kind of different narrative when it comes to, you know, should we all be part of the European Union and continue this expansion of centralized government? And that's a really positive thing. I think that's at least, I mean, again, it doesn't mean that it has to be where some people are sitting around waiting for something to be absolutely flawless, 100% perfect to come along before they decide to kind of join in the cause or just put a little bit of effort behind it. I think it's rather the opposite way. We have to find where is there an ounce of a little bit of improvement where we can go. Let's go in that direction and kind of nudge our way forward. Again, otherwise nothing else will be done and we'll sit around and wait on our asses forever, you know?
Yeah, well, people are waiting to be saved. Give me the script that will save me. I just don't want to participate. Just let me know when I'm saved, please. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of attitude. But we don't really need to structure any type of new system. We need to rediscover ourselves because once we start operating according to moral parameters, then the new system will construct itself around us. It'll be an organic thing. This system that we have could work to a point where we rediscover ourselves enough that we don't need a system, but we have to change the way we apply ourselves to it. And if we change the way we interact with each other and start doing what is right in all that we do, rather than supporting wars, rather than supporting a government that's supporting a war, rather than not questioning this authority and not questioning what's going on, step into ourselves, and we can do this because we have discovered ourselves enough to appreciate the people around us and realize that we're all in this together and get rid of all this division and barriers, realize that we're being played. We're all being played by parameters that aren't our own. And, you know, we can step into our power and do what is right in all that we do, and a new system will mold itself around us. It will have to change according to our new state of consciousness. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be an internal thing. You've got to change the way you apply yourself to the world. You've got to have that warrior spirit. You've got to be able to step into the divine masculine. It's there.
Yeah.
We've been taught to become these fluffy little non-violent things, and I'm not advocating violence at all. But don't step on me because I will respond. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to step on you. I don't even want to prosecute anybody for what they've done. I don't care. Just go away. Stop controlling my life. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go in another direction. And you don't represent me, and I don't have to give you my tax money. I don't have to do any of this stuff because you're destroying the planet around me, you know, and it's not acceptable. We just have to step into who we are, I think, Henrik. And if we do start doing what is right in all that we do, the system can't function according to that.
Yeah,
but the hard thing is breaking the programming of people. I mean, I can't imagine being an Israeli soldier and going and doing the damage that these people are doing to Gaza Strip right now. Like that video footage that I showed you, where they did that one suburb in 1 hour. These are residential homes. These are people. These are defenseless people. Yeah, and not only are they doing this to these people, they're slandering them by calling them terrorists while they do it. And this is the most brutal terror you've ever seen. And they've bombed hospitals. They've bombed mosques. They've shooting ambulances. They've committed so many war crimes. And the only thing that's going to stop it is an international force that goes in there and stops the Israelis killing these people. And that's only going to come if we choose to step into our power and demand that it happens. You know, demand that our governments do it. And the Israeli people and the Israeli soldiers need to wake up to what they're doing. This has the potential to destroy the reputation of Israel forever. What these people are doing to Gaza Strip. And this will eventually bring about the implosion of the state of Israel if they continue with this ethnic cleansing of Gaza Strip.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think the tables on that will eventually turn. And again, if this is a foundation that's built on on lies and the kind of immorality that we've seen, then I don't think that nature is going to allow it to stand, to be honest. And just speaking to something you said before there as well, I think that the New Age and all these trappings have been tremendously beneficial in keeping people in check in terms of non-action and actually sticking your head in the sand. And but the fact is, it doesn't matter how much we're trying to escape from it or trying to pretend that it doesn't exist. It was kind of what I said before. If you are, you know, cornered up against the wall, I mean, it's a matter of you acting to be able to preserve your own life. And I think that that has been another aspect to all of this. Now, I mentioned sacrifice before, and I mean that in the truest positive sense that I can. But today, it's like we're expected to make sacrifices that are based on this non-action, that we are to give up ourselves, that we are to even remove our basic human nature for the sake of some kind of global, you know, new world order paradise pipe dream that they have, an idea of how we're supposed to live or something like that, where we basically are, where we remove our basic humanity so that the system may operate peacefully. It's not a system that is adapted towards how we are or how we are as human beings and how we live and how we prefer to live and with whom and everything else. It's about them creating for us a framework where we have to basically castrate ourselves and mind numb ourselves to be able to live in it. And that's the wrong kind of sacrifice to make. And I think a lot of that is actually tied into some of these trappings around, as you said before, the kind of Eckhart Tolle thinking or the New Age. And sure, there can be some good ideas coming through there too. But at the same time, this idea of not you being able to stand up for yourself or defend yourself or even using violence at these instances is something that I've been coming ferociously critical of, actually, because I see how much damage that it has caused, Max.
Well, yeah, it has. I mean, it's allowed to see what's happening in Gaza. It's allowed this to occur, this attitude. And make no mistake, you know, we're seeing, talking of sacrifice, we're seeing the sacrifice of 900,000 children in the Gaza Strip. You know, 1.8 million people, 900,000 innocent children will die in this battle if we do not stop it. And don't believe the figures that are coming in of 1,000 dead and this and that. There'd be tens of thousands dead. In Gaza Strip is very, very populated, very, very densely packed stretch of land. And these people are sacrificing themselves for the world, and the world should stand up to this and should stand up and see what's coming if they don't. And there's so many rabbit holes that people have been led down, even the whole free man stuff. All this stuff, learning the law and knowing that you're not your name and all this sort of stuff, in a perfect world, that's all very good well to know that stuff. If the system works and if these people are honest and if they're not psychopaths that are going to come and rip you to pieces with dime ammunition and a drop of white phosphorus over your alternate community, you know, because this is where we're going, you know. We've been numbed into a state where we would allow the sacrifice of 900,000 children to come onto our televisions every day and just think that it's all good and Israel is just defending itself. Now, like Claire Daly said, it's like the equivalent of a heavyweight boxer taking on a newborn baby. That's what we're seeing, and the world's just letting it happen. And that's a scary thing. Because all our governments are supporting this system. They can go to any community. They can declare it terrorist. They can say, look, these guys were dissenting. We had to do it. And actually, they killed them all themselves. They told them not to leave their homes. If you don't leave your homes, well, you're going to die because we're going to turn the whole place into rubble because there might be a terrorist in there. You know, it's legitimizing this. That's what they're doing to Gaza. They're turning it into rubble, the entire Gaza Strip. And they're saying, we're giving the people warning to leave. They can go leave their homes and be safe. But there's nowhere to go. There's a wall around three sides of the country and an ocean on the other side. And if you swim into the ocean, you get shot. There's nowhere to go. There is no safe area. So they can't leave their homes. There's nothing they can possibly do to stop what's happening. They're completely and utterly defenseless. The only people that can save us is us. So please, please make noise. Everybody make noise. Now's the time to stand up. This is a litmus test, Henrik. And I say it's been a real The screaming silence from so much of the alternate media on this issue has been deafening.
Right. Yeah. No, I believe you're absolutely right when you say as well that this is something that sooner or later in one version or another is going to show up at your own door. I mean, that's what I really believe. I think that this idea of, urban warfare and the way that, militarization has occurred of the police forces and these kinds of civil war conditions that we mentioned before due to ethnic and religious conflicts and cultural conflicts, is something that's going to reach us all if we don't speak up and stop this in its tracks now, because eventually, I mean, we can continue to stick our heads in the sand, but that's not going to change the environment around us. And I think that this is a very important point to continue to bring up and say that, I mean, if you're smart enough and you can see, you know, the trajectory of where this is heading, of where we're all heading around the world with these kinds of global conflicts that they're creating, then we can see that, okay, this is something that's going to occur within, you know, X amount of years. And if we don't try to stop it now, it is going to unfold and it is going to happen. So it is up to people who have that capacity and to see those, you know, signs, if you will, to speak up about it and say something to that effect. Otherwise, it's going to be creating conditions which are not going to be pleasant. And then we have to face them. Maybe not that it's too late. I don't consider that to be the case. But it's going to be at a point when things are going to be certainly more desperate than they are now. So how do you see the changing of this, let's say, dialogue in the media then, and kind of changing this whole rhythm? Because I think that the mainstream press is slowly doing itself the disservice of discrediting itself, which is a plus for us, of course, in terms of how they're reporting on stories, and people know more and more that it's all lies. They're turning away from it, which is very positive, you know. So how do you see that playing out, of bringing more attention to these kinds of issues in the future to make people wake up, Max? Is it about continuing to kind of push on the same issues that we've been talking about today, and continuing to showing the double standards, continue to show the hypocrisy in not only Israel, but all the other policies that we see that the globalists are creating? Or do you think we should have a different approach and a different plan altogether?
Well, look, I think we've really, I mean, we can do all of the above, and we should continue to do all of the above, but we've really got to stand tall and start questioning these people openly and start standing up for what's right. And when we approach this issue, we've got to stop dealing in as much as countries. Like I said, we've got to realize that it isn't really essentially the state of Israel that's doing this. It's this Zionist control grid that's doing this, and this is sort of run out of Europe anyway. I mean, Israel is just the attack dog. The whole planet is under hypnosis. The whole planet is programmed. We've got to step above the programming and realize that these aren't countries battling with each other. These are battles of energy, and it's a battle of control of the whole planet that's been put in place here. So we've got to realize that, you know, none of our governments are doing the right thing. None of our governments have our interests at heart. You know, any government that is supporting this incursion into Gaza Strip right now is part of the problem, very, very much part of the problem. The only thing that's going to deal with that is us. We have to deal with our governments. These are all rogue governments. Unfortunately, they are, because they're not dealing with this issue. You've got to wonder why. Why is everyone letting Israel do what it does? When I say Israel, essentially it's the Benjamin Netanyahu government doing what it does. But who does Benjamin Netanyahu work for? I mean, some people say he has a lot of to do with MI5 and with the Crown and all sorts of stuff. You've got to wonder whether there's this whole influence is in there.
The Rothschilds.
That path if you want.
Possibly.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately you can look at all of this stuff, but it's another rabbit hole. Ultimately it's irrelevant. What's relevant is that we have a clear and present danger right here, right now. How do we deal with it, you know? And we've got to realize, well, all of our governments are supporting it. That's why it's still going on. So we've got to question our governments, not just have marches in the street, but openly start questioning these people and start openly questioning the media. Why aren't you reporting on this issue properly? Now, everybody should be ringing their politicians. Everybody should be ringing the media. They need to be getting thousands and thousands of phone calls saying, we know what's going on, and if you don't address it, well, we'll come in and address it. You know, we'll come to the studio and we'll talk on the TV. These studios are just little places. TV studios look like they're big, huge buildings and stuff, but they're just places, you know. These are just people. They control all the airwaves and they program everybody. We've got to sort of find a way of dealing with the programming. We've got to find a way of getting the message out. We've got to make as much noise as possible and as publicly as possible and really start questioning these people, because they are looking like fools, and they're not going to like looking like fools for too much longer. So things may get pretty ugly pretty quickly if we don't, you know. And we can't let them get away with this. We can't let them get away with this blatant ethnic cleansing and this horrible terrorism that they're committing against Gaza Strip. We've got to do something about it. And really, ultimately, it's Western governments that are allowing it. So we've got to deal with it. So again, why does Israel get away with it? So perhaps it's the Samson option. Perhaps that's what, you know, they want to do. Perhaps it's real.
Mm-hmm.
If it is real, I mean, you've got to wonder, is anything they say real? Is Iron Dome real? I've heard from different people that all Iron Dome actually does is put about 9 or 10 different blips on the screen when one missile's launched, and it puts 10 more on the screen, then shoots 10 of them down and one hits the ground. So it's just, it doesn't even exist. It's just a, so they can say that there's thousands of rockets coming over. See, it's on our computer. It says so.
Right.
But they just put them all in there. It's only probably a tenth of that. And they're just little pipes. And who's sending these pipes over? Who benefits from these pipes coming over? Israel. Look what they get to do in response to these little pipes, which don't do any damage at all.
Yeah, it might be a false flag attack, basically. That's what you're saying. And the response is the desired outcome that they wanted to achieve anyway, which is to bomb the Gaza, people living in Gaza, into oblivion, basically.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the only people who can stop it is us, because like I said, they've destabilized the entire region. There's no really any way to get in there. You need an international force to go in there, which would have to come across the Mediterranean Sea, you know, come from Turkey or Italy or anywhere, somewhere, you know, but you'd never get there by land. But it needs to stop. It needs to stop right now, and the only people who are going to stop it is us. I've been really pushing this because I've got friends on the ground there, beautiful, beautiful people that are still alive who cannot believe what's happening. Why isn't anyone standing up for us? These people, they took out Al-Shifa Hospital yesterday. Like, this is the biggest hospital in Gaza. They're shelling hospitals, they're shelling ambulances, they're completely ethnically cleansing the entire Gaza Strip, and they're getting away with it. And it's making the whole world look like a bunch of fools, really. We've got to do something, folks. This is the litmus test, because if they can get away with this, well, that's about it. The world doesn't care what we do. If we can do this, we can do anything. And that's the problem, you know. If we don't address it, I keep saying it to people, the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And we need to pay attention. This is the moment that we have to step up to the plate. I think, as I said before, I think it's the biggest event since 9/11. I've never ever seen a Western so-called democratic nation so openly carry out war crimes and just bring the party to you, you know, with weapons from nightmares, weapons that are stuff you couldn't even dream of inventing, the horrible things that they're doing to these children. So it's a huge blood sacrifice, Henrik, and it's very disturbing. It's very disturbing that people aren't paying attention to it, you know. That's the most disturbing part about it, that people simply aren't paying attention. I mean, there's a lot of people marching in the streets, but a lot of people aren't. A lot of people just think, oh, they're at it again.
You know? Yeah, exactly. They get these ideas come to them, or these news stories, rather, come to them many, many times a year in some cases, some of these more extreme kind of waves come every other year or something like that, you know. But it's one more point here before we wrap up. What do you think it would take for the surrounding, because you mentioned Arab Spring, at this being kind of like a ruse to kind of get them disorganized to a certain extent, trying to detopple their own government, etc. There might be some true sentiments behind that among the people who are protesting and all that stuff, but largely that they've been kind of manipulated into it. I've had that sense of the matter for a long time as well. But what would it take for the surrounding, let's say, Arab areas, do you think, to kind of clean up from this and look at their common cause and look at towards Israel and start helping Palestine out? Because again, I mean, it's a surprise. What is the West Bank? It borders to, you know, Jordan there and stuff like that. I mean, again, I'm surprised that we're not seeing much more Iran, but I guess they might be so terrified of this idea that Israel, you know, they even have nukes at their disposal, as we know from, you know, Vanunu, that they might use them on anybody who tried to help out in the situation. Maybe that's the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Iran steps one foot in to help Palestine, you've got your World War III straight up, and they'd love that. Israel's been trying to kickstart that for a long time. And the neighboring countries, Jordan and stuff, you can't get there. I mean, you can get there by land. You'd never be able to fly there. Israel's a major, major military power. It could stomp on any of its countries. Any country in the area, it's the strongest military in the area, you know. So, and Jordan, to go there by land, you'd have to cross Israel. So you can't get across the Sinai. So, and Egypt's not going to help, because Egypt's completely destabilized, and this guy's a complete American and Israeli sympathizer. So, you know, and he's probably going to get a cut of the oil fields anyway that they found off Gaza. So he's completely closed Rafah border. So there's no way out. And so it's very, very difficult for any of the Arab nations to step in and help. The only thing that's going to stop it is pressure from the West. Really, this is the only thing that's going to stop it, and that's difficult. I mean, Israel, like it said with the Samson option, it says it's got missiles trained on every major city on Earth, and if anybody ever threatens Israel's existence, then it will take out the entire world. That's what the Israeli government has said on at least three occasions, and they call that the Samson option, and you can Google that, and you can see the statements that these people have made about this. This is pretty scary. I mean, this is holding the world to ransom, basically saying we're going to do things our way, and if anybody steps in to stop us, you're going to be viewed as anti-Semitic and you're going to be viewed as someone who is a threat to the state of Israel and so will destroy the world. So basically, we're going to do everything we want our way and you're all going to go along with it or we're going to destroy the world. That's kind of what they've set up with this whole Samson option. And they've managed to do this by saying we're the victim, everybody hates us, so we need the ability to be able to kill everybody if we need to because someone may hurt us. And that's a hell of a culture to set up. And this is sort of, if you look at the whole Khazar history and how they converted and they really became to believe all of this stuff and believe they were this lion and then they suddenly got attacked and got thrown out of the area and wandered as nomads for years and kept this whole seething, you know, hatred and seething, you know, we want revenge and we've got to protect ourselves and this whole mentality alive, you can see how it's kind of led to this, you know what I mean? But it's like a victim mentality taken to the most extreme to become a completely psychopathic culture. And if you look at books such as Political Ponerology, you know, when you've got psychopaths that create a culture or create a business or create a society, then the morality of the psychopath becomes the morality of those who work within that structure. It's just naturally taught to them to operate according to certain parameters. They may not like it. They may feel guilty about it. They may be doing the wrong thing and feel bad about it. But eventually, over generations and over time, that gets weeded out. And the whole culture and the whole view of yourself and the view of the outside world becomes a psychopathic view. And you just don't have empathy. You don't have empathy towards anybody outside that bubble. And this is what's been created through this whole victim mentality of the Zionist culture, which is essentially what the Zionist culture is. It's a victim mentality taken to a psychopathic degree. Really, I mean, Zionism is truly a mental disease. It's a psychic pathogen, and it turns people into something that is I don't know what it is that is Zionist, but really it's a huge victim mentality taken to the degree of a psychopath where everybody is against you, and so you've just got to set yourself up to what we see as this modern state of Israel. I mean, how else do you explain it, Henrik? It's a completely psychopathic culture, you know?
Yeah, no, I would include the Abrahamic religions in that too, definitely as a kind of a mind virus that came on later in the game and later on to the scene. Of course, that's a huge issue in itself, and maybe we can continue and talk more about that at another time, Max. But thank you so much for coming back again. Very, very interesting discussion, as always. Some challenging ideas, I think, and specifically some points of history that we urge people to look into for themselves. I think some very important and interesting issues to get some thoughts firing around, as it's about time to question all aspects of history and not just kind of buy the version we've been sold in certain aspects and then challenging it in others. I think it's about having a broad base of questions fired away at all of it. So do look into it, folks. All right. Thank you so much, Max, for coming back on again. Give us your websites again, and if there's anything else you'd like to leave us with.
My website is thecrowhouse.com. That's thecrowhouse.com. And the Gaza website is gazashield.com. It'd be great if you could go and sign up to that. Something I just love what you said there is the Abrahamic religion. Something that I love that John Lash said was that was the moment that man got dispossessed, was when Abraham was promised the land of Israel. And essentially at that moment, man was dispossessed from the earth and that lion went out dispossessing everybody else. And that's what we see here. Thanks for having me on, Henrik. It was great to talk to you again, brother.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, don't miss our upcoming two programs with John Lash on a lot of the connected issues that we discussed here today, taking this discussion into the much-needed territory of the identification of the problem and what to do with it. We also have an update from the gallery owner in Sweden who exhibited Don Park's art. Do you remember him? Henrik Rundqvist, whose gallery got raided by police on opening day of the showing. He's now awaiting to be prosecuted for hate speech. Sweden, oh Sweden, the land where everyone is accepted and equal. Unless you're Swedish and critical of cultural Marxism, pathological multiculturalism, and believe in free speech. Just hate yourself and bow down. You'll be fine. That's right. We also have Janice Barcelo and Mark Passio coming on after this. Then we have Jack Donovan on Radio 314. We are working on some other really good shows as well, so stay tuned and keep arming yourself with truth and a level-headed approach with both feet firmly placed in the beauty and wisdom of nature and the natural order. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for listening.